So good evening. So tonight is about forgiveness. And we could say it's about unbinding the heart, liberating the heart from the pain of being unforgiven, of having a tightness of heart that does not allow forgiveness to flow outward. And this is seen in other traditions of the Jewish faith as we approach the Jewish New Year and the Day of Atonement. There's a deep acknowledgement of how we may have harmed others, asking for forgiveness. In our own tradition, the Buddhist tradition, there's a sense of really acknowledging how we may harm others, and that deep acknowledgement, okay, may I have your forgiveness. So it's wonderful to align with that energy of this time of year. A simple offering and asking for forgiveness, both for our own actions, the actions of others, and also ways that we've harmed ourselves, including ourselves in this. It's often said that when you forgive yourself, you're deeply benefiting your own heart. You're benefiting yourself as much as the other person. There's a sense of unshackling your heart from that pain of tightness, of hardness of heart. And receiving forgiveness, someone being willing to forgive you for your actions, for the ways that you're harmed, it allows the heart to become more and more at rest. Yet forgiveness can't be rushed or forced. You know, we often experience some deep pain from other people's actions. As our own actions harm others, it takes a certain timing, a certain patience for forgiveness to naturally start to emerge, to arise. That's why we often phrase these as, may I ask for your forgiveness, may you forgive me, may I forgive. So it's setting this intention. It's like planting a seed and releasing the outcome of that seed. It starts to gently incline the mind toward the possibility of forgiveness if the timing isn't right for this full-hearted release. Releasing any agenda of what the practice may lead to. This month we're also looking at loving kindness, and forgiveness is often a precursor for loving kindness to emerge as we clear out any areas of needing to ask for forgiveness and forgiving ourselves, receiving forgiveness. It allows our heart to start to relax so loving kindness and metta can naturally flow. So having a sense of patience. And often we cause harm or pain in another person, we're coming from our own pain. We're coming from our own wounding. Or if you use the more traditional, the three unwholesome roots that we'll be talking about, John will be talking about in a couple months, this sense of greed, hatred, and delusion, as those arise in our system, we often lash out through fear, through anger, and cause harm. And often it takes a while for us to calm down, stop seeing red, to be able to ask for forgiveness, to start to drop our righteousness of our pain. Or if we were hurt, when we were wounded or harmed, the fear, the anger, that takes a while for that to soften, to start to feel a sense of safety that, okay, maybe I can offer forgiveness. So being patient, taking time. And so tonight I'd like to explore three aspects that may help encourage this quality of forgiveness. Almost think of them as precursors or preconditions that when we open to them and allow them to develop, allow forgiveness to start to arise. The first one is this softening of the heart. And I think back to the last time that you were hurt by someone else's actions, or that you caused harm to someone else. You may have felt a sense, your heart probably felt very hard, a sense of guarding, a sense of outrage, a tightness through the chest, through the heart center. So for forgiveness to be possible, there has to be this softening. And how that softening happens is often very mysterious. There's some way that we have to let go of our agenda. And a key aspect of this is not taking things personally. Not taking things personally. Now, backing up for a second, not to use that in the normal sense, because often we say, okay, I'm not going to take that personally. There's a little bit of a perhaps feeling aloof, protected, not really regarding the other person's opinion. And we may say we're not taking it personally, but we really are. Or when someone tells you, now don't take this personally, but, and it's usually followed by a very personal statement that just, you know, just grips. But not taking it personally means not making a person out of that. Not making a person out of this experience. Not forming into a sense of self. Okay, so that naturally will tend to arise because of our conditioning. But how much do we continue to add to that, to continue to enhance it, to buy into it through our reactivity, through our acting out of that? So not taking it personal comes from a wisdom that there's no person at all to take a person to. So this is the teachings of anatta or anatta. So the sense of not taking it personal. I mean, so often when there's a sense of being judged or attacked or a sense of having done something you're ashamed of, we naturally take that action and then make a story about ourselves. You know, I'm such a bad person because of what I've done. Right? This is a very deep way that we take it personal. So it's very difficult actually to fully acknowledge our actions and the impact of our actions, regardless of the intent. So, okay, I did say that, I did do that, and I see how it harmed you. At the same time, not to use that as another way to further enhance our low self-esteem, our sense of self-dislike. This is reinforcing that sense of self. So it's not taking it personal, not making a person out of these conflicts that arise. It begins with the softening. There's a sense of softening, which often leads to a quality of listening. Listening to ourselves, listening to someone else's pain, listening to how we've been affected. This willingness to hear how our actions have affected someone. This willingness to admit how we may have fallen down. So paradoxically, as we soften, we start to feel the hurt more directly, more acutely. We start to see that going into blame, into justification is actually quite a strong deflection of that. But being willing to just open to that, okay, let me feel that ache in my heart, just that prick, without moving from it. Moving means thinking about it, acting from it, creating a new thought process around it, papancha around it, but just simply feeling it in stillness, feeling it in this vast openness of the heart. Okay, then as we do that, that softening starts to allow us to incline toward forgiveness. On the other hand, if we're in that tightness, from that tightness grows righteousness, opinionation. I'm actually right that I'm glad I said that. That was a hurtful thing. Those are the kind of things that come out of our mouths. Or when someone hurts us, there's that sense of, I don't want to ever see that person again, ever have anything to do with that person again. The softening is this inclination to maybe listen a little bit. And it takes courage. I remember many times when my wife and I have a little argument or some gritchiness, there's at some point when after we're kind of tired of indulging in the righteousness and the, you know, storming off, that willingness just to sit next to each other and say, okay, let me hear what's going on. To ask that in a very sincere, very open way. And you just hear the story of how your actions affected and the meaning that had in that person. This quality of softening. So forgiveness starts to loosen this tendency to make a conclusion about our experience, a conclusion that, okay, this is who I am. So softening. And this next aspect is apology. Because we can have this sense of softening, we have this sense of, okay, I'm open to this person. But sometimes we skip over the real difficult work of making a very clear and effective apology, of fully acknowledging what is here. So it's specific. There's not a lot of wiggle room about, I was kind of not acting very skillfully there. There's a very clarity about, this is exactly what I did. This is the impact on you. And if you ever had the blessing of having someone apologize in that way, it loosens up the relationship in a tremendous way, just to be acknowledged. There's a physician who was a cardiologist and won a Nobel Peace Prize for Doctors Without Borders. But he was observing that when a doctor gets sued for malpractice, it's usually a breakdown of communication. The doctor says, okay, I didn't do anything wrong. And he realized if he actually approached it by listening to the person's complaint, their distress, the connection was maintained and there was no malpractice. You know, that sense of being willing to listen, to be heard. So this is a beautiful paradox because we're talking about very painful aspects, things that touch us in some of our deepest wounding, you know, both when we're being hurt or when we're hurting someone else. So it's very personal. But yet when we allow ourselves to release the personal meaning, we're able to both hold both at the same time, with this paradox of the emptiness, the non-self of it, but also the very personal meaning of it. In this way, forgiveness starts to arise. We're able to really hear, we're able to really speak. So there's these five steps of apology that I am taking from Professor Michael Dews from an Art of Conflict Management course. So when an apology is really effective, when it's really clear, it begins with a specific definition of the offending behavior. A specific definition of that offending behavior. This is what I did. This is what I said. This is my action. In a very clear, direct way. And this also is something that so much of our conflict is not so agreed upon what is really, has really happened. You know, what was said, what was done. And we may be hearing things very differently. So spending some time to really make sure, okay, we both agree upon this is what happened. That sense of the specific definition of the offending behavior. This is where this personal and impersonal comes in. If we're not taking it so personally, we're able to fully state, yeah, this is what I said. This is what I did. This is is true of my actions. The next step is an acknowledgement that the behavior caused harm. You're really acknowledging to the person that you've harmed, I said this, I did this, and I see that it hurt you. I see that it caused pain. And this step, I think it's really helpful to listen to that other person. Because I would often say this with my wife, I see that when I did this certain action that was harmful, it hurt you. But as I listened, I would hear more the nuances of the particular wounding that it touched, the very tender places that she felt touched by that. And I was able to really understand it much more clearly than simply saying, when I said this, you felt hurt. This sense of being specific, you know, that I'm sorry that I hurt you isn't enough. I think there needs to be that real clarity, that really point of connection when it works for the relationship that you're in. The next step is a statement of responsibility for the behavior and the harm that it's caused. Because so often we don't take responsibility. It's someone else's fault. I did this because you did this to me. Right? It was justified. Right? So you can see the vulnerability, the willingness to be very tender with this. Yeah, I said that. Whatever you said or what else someone else said doesn't excuse the fact that I still acted from this. One of the wise reflections is I'm an heir. My actions are my own. I'm an heir to my actions. You know, I'm the only one who has control over my actions. The next step is a statement of regret. Okay, so you can see we acknowledged what we did. We acknowledged that it caused harm. We took full responsibility for the fact that we did that and it caused harm. And there's a sense of regret. And I'm sorry that that hurt you. I'm sorry that caused that pain. And finally, there's a commitment to avoiding or repeating the behavior. Kind of closing the loop. This starts to set the stage. This is all a precursor to forgiveness. We start to set the stage that there is a safety in this relationship. There is a willingness to acknowledge the way that we harm each other, a willingness to fully own up to that, and also to learn from that, to change that, to reflect, how can I really see this? And for myself, there's often a trying to see, okay, what was the precursor? What was that own pain that I was acting from, or the unconsciousness of that moment, the sense of whatever I was wanting? And to really see, okay, can I recognize that in my body? Can I start to feel when that rises up and then make a different choice than acting out from that? So these five aspects of apology, a specific definition of the offending behavior, an acknowledgement that the behavior caused harm, a statement of responsibility for the behavior and the harm, focus, a statement of regret, and a commitment to avoiding repeating the behavior. So this allows a very full-hearted, sincere apology. Yeah. So can you consider that next time you feel like you've hurt someone? Can you bring these aspects forth? And you find that your relationship really benefits from that. It's painful, it's difficult, but it really strengthens relationships. And again, starts to incline the heart toward forgiveness. Can you imagine if someone gave you this kind of an apology, your heart would soften. There'd be a sense, yeah, I can offer some forgiveness to some degree in this moment. So we have a softening of a heart, we have a quality of apology. And the next precursor, the final precursor, is that of making amends. Making amends. Trying to fix what is broken in the relationship. You know, sometimes we can't go back and perfectly make things the way they were. But we can often do a lot to make the relationship whole again. Now, amends are interesting. Because often, if we look at forgiveness, sometimes I think we look at it perhaps a little too narrowly as something that I did to you or you did to me. We also have to take our own self into it, really include ourselves with this need to forgive for our own harm that we cause ourselves. Sometimes the harm is not leaving when we need to leave, not saying no when we need to say no to a destructive or abusive relationship. So this amends is also including boundaries that we may establish for ourselves, the way that we're not allow ourselves to be hurt again in that way. Sylvia Bordstein said a great quote, that you can throw someone out of your life, but not out of your heart. You can throw someone out of your life, that sense of, no, this is not okay, it's not safe to be around this person, but not out of your heart. This is where forgiveness comes in, this quality of keeping your heart whole. So then from these precursors, forgiveness starts to have its seeds, it starts to grow, there's this potentiality. And I think it's helpful just to test it out. Say, may you forgive me, may I forgive you, and just see what the heart does. If it contracts, there's a sense of being patient with it, seeing if there needs to be some more work to be done around that. Forgiveness is not about approving of someone else's behavior. It's really about liberating our own heart. Now, if asking for forgiveness or receiving forgiveness is difficult, if you try to apply forgiveness and there's that tension of the heart, it's important to listen to that. One is to trust time, to trust that it has the sense of patience. But not too much, you know, because sometimes we think, I just need more time, But that starts to become disguised as avoidance, as trying to avoid the difficult. So there is time that's needed, but we also have to be willing to keep reworking that issue, reworking that pain that was caused. It takes patience for the heart to emerge. It has to be a willingness to open. It has to be willing for that, to wait for that to rise, but careful not to slip into avoidance. If you're also having difficulty making it more specific, really looking, can I really go through exactly what happened? What was the behavior? Sometimes it's easier to be upset for a long time if we're a little vague about why we're really upset. Like I told a story about my father-in-law and his brother who didn't speak for 30 years until one of them had a heart attack and that relationship ended in that way. And they forgot what they were upset about. They just knew they didn't want to talk to that other person. You know? But if you had that, okay, what am I really upset about? How am I really hurt? Being very clear, going through that can be very helpful. Because sometimes what you write out or clarify, you see it's not very clear. And it takes a while to work through it to make that a very I statement. And offering a specific apology, really acknowledging what was done. And finally, if forgiveness seems so remote, turn toward yourself. Is there something in myself that I need to forgive? Actions I've done toward myself. Do I need to receive that forgiveness? So including ourselves in this, we're often so harsh with ourselves. We're often so unallowing with ourselves. I think forgiveness might be needed. Because the heart is only whole when there's nothing, absolutely nothing kept outside of it, including ourselves. All right, thank you.
So I think I'm going to talk about the other side of forgiveness. There's a reason why we do this ceremony as a forgiveness and welcoming ceremony, because there's another side to forgiveness that I think in some respects we kind of forget that. And it's actually the good side. It's sort of like in everything in Dhamma, there is two sides to the same coin. There is suffering and there's the end of suffering. But this suffering and the end of suffering are simultaneous. They happen together. It's not like you can, all this practice that we're doing is not just about going into suffering continuously every day, all day, and never really seeing the cessation of that suffering. The idea is to go into the suffering so you can see the cessation of it. And that's what we really want, is the cessation of the suffering. It's a pleasant, well-being, loving, kind, peaceful experience. But sometimes we try to get to that experience without going through the suffering. Somehow we want to bypass the suffering part, get to the cessation part, but it doesn't really work like that. If you're willing to turn towards the suffering and look at it, then your capacity to see its cessation happens at the same time. It's the same way with forgiveness. These precursors that Tim is talking about, that work that we do to soften the heart, to come to a place where we can acknowledge our own harm or the harm that's actually in the elephant in the room, the harm that's in the room, in my space, in my mind, this sense of acknowledging that harm, this apology approaching up to it. All of these precursors is sort of like looking at the suffering. But there is a cessation of suffering that's also connected to forgiveness. And I think that's what I want to spend a little time talking about. And it's why we do this as a ceremony, because ceremonies have a way of giving us the courage to do things that we may not necessarily give ourselves permission to do outside of it. Ceremonies create capacity to do things, to step up to the plate. And the side of forgiveness that we kind of avoid a lot is the renewing aspect of forgiveness, the welcoming aspect of forgiveness. It is the shedding of the past, and it's moving towards the future. So it's this moving out of this heavier space into a much lighter, easier space. It's letting something lie where it is and moving on without it. It's an aspect of the Dhamma that it's almost necessary to see things as they are, to see the past as the past and not as the some kind of a permanent thing attached to me. One time I went to Rodney and I told him that, you know, I was old enough and done with my past. And somehow or another, he and I need to figure out how I was going to move outside of that past. I didn't know how I was going to do it, but I figured between the two of us, we could figure something out. And there's a movement that Rodney did that I'm going to show you. I've never forgot that movement. I think about it all the time when I get really, really heavy. He said, he was sitting there and he goes, "Great, Tori, it's time for us to go now. It's time to go." And I was sitting there and he goes, "Do that." Trying to be like, you know, okay. And he's like, no, let's go. That's what we're going to do. We're going to go. And that is what forgiveness is. That's the aspect of forgiveness that we never get to because we keep balled up in this ball because it's so painful and it's so like, oh, I got to protect all this woundedness. And actually, if you think about it, if you imagine that wound as having a chain attached to you, then every time there's a wound, we're dragging all these chains around with us, with these balls of wounds. And it gets heavier and heavier and heavier and heavier to move through the world. But in Dhamma, you can realize it's all in the past. It's already happened. It doesn't have any purpose other than you're carrying it around. And you can carry it forever. So some of the precursors that Tim's talking about is if you really want to have a reconciliation with someone, reconciliation, like with him and his wife, and we're going to find a way to reconcile. But there's another aspect to forgiveness, which is nothing more than shedding that moment in time, letting it go, letting it be right where it's at, and that's the end of it. There's a quote I heard from about that is attributed to Buddha, but he said that just like a snake sheds its skin, that we need to shed our past over and over and over. This idea that you shed your past, but if you think about it, when we look at kids and we see the innocence in them, what they don't have is history. They don't have the weightedness. They don't have the jackets that you put on. You know, if every time something bad happens to us, we put a coat on and a jacket, you can see how heavy we would be walking around carrying all this weight. And children don't have that. They don't have the weight that we have as adults. But there's nothing that says we have to carry that weight. Nothing. There's no thing that says, oh yes, I have honor and dignity because I carry all this weight. You can see it. It's just heavy. No one sees the weight that you're carrying of all the past harm and all the harm you've done and all the harm done to you. No one sees it except for you. You walk around carrying this weight that's invisible to everybody else, except for you. So in this act, in these moments of forgiveness, we are actually opening up ourselves to this capacity to step into the world anew. You're actually in the present moment, not the past. You actually are opening up the possibility of this lighter, freer well-being. Having lived with so much harm done when I was a child. It's just so much harm when I was a child. So I'm living with harm all the time. And I had a sit one time at Cloud Mountain. And in the course of this sit, I had it's like a mind-blowing awareness that the bulk of my harm came from my father. And I realized, first of all, I hardly ever saw the man. So it's not like when I was a child and I lived with him every day, all day. He was the leader of my whole life. He set the rules for everything we did. He set everything. So there was nothing I could do without his approval or his permission for many, many, many years. And he was very strict, so it was just like not possible. I think if I remember correctly about during the sit, I had a memory of my sister and I so excited the first time we bought orange juice. Because my father thought orange juice was way too expensive and there were 10 of us, so he just thought, no, orange juice. So I can remember my sister and I, we had our own apartments and we go to the store and we bought orange juice. And we had little glasses just because, you know, we didn't want to drink too much because it's so expensive. Now, I just drink as much orange juice as I want. But back then, it was such a sacred thing that we could buy this orange juice. And I remember, I had this memory flash into my mind of buying orange juice and she and I talking about how exciting it was that first time. And it hit me. My father, I don't live with that man. I carry him around all the time, my whole life, day in, day out. I don't live with him. He doesn't control my finances. He doesn't control any aspect of my life. He wouldn't even show up in this room but for me bringing it up. It's sort of this realization I had that I actually did not have to carry him around anymore. That there was no one around that was going to get mad about it. There was no big deal about it. I could just leave him there at Cloud Mountain and that would be the end of it. And if I left and drove off without him, nobody was going to stop me at the some kind of a checkpoint. Do you have your dad with you? No? Go back and get him. I didn't have to carry him anymore. It was such an eye-opening experience that for those of you that have been to Cloud Mountain, when you leave and you go out, there's all these little walkways, all these paths around all these trees. I remember going into the path, telling all these trees, I had left my father here. He's a little difficult, but I know that you can handle him. You can hold on to him. This kind of ceremonial thing of leaving him there. But you can see, you can feel how much lighter. It was my father, my difficulty, and yet we can all in this room feel how much lighter it is having left him there. Just think of all the things that if you stopped carrying it, if you just let it be, how much lighter life would be. It's the cessation of suffering that happens. So you do the precursor work and the ceremony aspect of forgiveness in order to experience the cessation of suffering, this lighter, more welcoming, more renewed way of being. And if instead of living year after year after year after year after year holding on to something, if we let go of things every year, once a year we just let it all go, start all over again. Let it all go, start all over again. There you go, Jean. You're so special. If we just let it go once a year and start all over again, something about that changes our lives. Something about this practice is not to keep us steeped in pain. This practice is to help us find a way to cessation of suffering, to find our way there. So the ceremony that we do is not because there's like 9 people out there that now I gotta figure out a way that I'm gonna forgive them. It's not that. It is your permission to you to say, that's it. I'm not seeking any more revenge. I'm not dwelling on the wrongness of their conduct. It doesn't mean you have to somehow or another say, oh, maybe it wasn't wrong. My father was wrong. Even with his mess, and he never apologized, never came square about it. You know, and of course I believe in reincarnation, so I'm not gonna tell you what kinds of things I think he's reincarnated into, but he never came square with any of that. But that's the point of forgiveness, especially the ceremonial aspect of forgiveness. I am not trying to reconcile with him. I am not trying to make it right with him. I'm trying to give myself permission to let it go, to move on in my own life without him, move on in my own life without it. At the same time, I'm trying to acknowledge that stuff that I do. As much as we want to believe that we are blameless in the world, that we are not causing harm, that we're doing right by people and doing good, and we're loving and kind, we still bump into people all the time. I have a friend who you just have to be patient with, right? Because they don't always see the harm they cause. And the more I practice, the more I see harm. And so I just listen to their words and their statements and this way of moving in the world, this way of being, and I can feel the harm all around. Harm to me, harm to other people. I just use it as a practice to remind myself, there is harm that I'm causing out there. I don't even see it. I don't intend it, but I intend the behavior that I'm doing, and the harm that comes from that is mine. And so there's this renewing, this capacity to just be as truthful and as honest as we can with ourselves that we cause harm to ourselves or we cause it to other people. It's not just about the harm that other people cause us. In fact, it seems another precursor that Tim could have talked about is if our willingness to see the harm in other people may help us see the harm that we cause also, or our willingness to see the harm that we cause other people might help us see the human nature of the harm that others have caused us. It's just this constant looking at harm. And then we put it in a ceremony so that we can hold it in a sacredness, give ourselves courage to do something that we would otherwise not be able to do, to create a space where we can put our intention for the harmlessness, our intention to for restraint, and our intention to do goodwill, we wrap all that up into the ceremony, and then we do the ceremony. And we let the ceremony be the aspect that helps us remember to be mindful of the harm we cause. So we're going to do two aspects of the ceremony. And Tim's going to describe the actual forgiveness practice that we're going to do, but I just want to give you the two different aspects of the ceremony we're going to do. The first one is just the asking of a forgiveness. I think it's probably one of the most precious things that has ever happened, that happens when you're at a retreat, if a teacher happens to do it. It can bring you to tears. That act of a teacher actually apologizing is, it's important, because sometimes we can put teachers and yogis, especially at a retreat, in this hierarchy kind of thing. I don't think we necessarily mean it, but I think we just do that because that's the way we look at it. Maybe it's the raised platform that kind of elevates us a bit. I don't know. But there's a way that we teachers and yogis get separated, and then at retreats, at the end of it, you kind of have this oneness that the ceremony brings. There's a oneness that happens between all of us in this ceremony. And then the bowing ceremony we're going to do is a little different. Kuan Yin Avalokiteshvara, Avalokiteshvara is the male body of Kuan Yin, the female body. And I just want to end this by sharing this story. I know some of you have probably already heard it, but I think this is the best Kuan Yin story ever. And I just repeat it all the time. I always remind myself about it, because there are hundreds of Kuan Yin stories. But I just think this is the best one. And this is the reason why we're doing the bowing ceremony at the end. Avalokiteshvara is a male form of a bodhisattva, a person who has dedicated their entire life for the well-being of all beings in the world. And so Avalokiteshvara, he lived his life, and they say, so the story goes, he was at the edge of being able to be enlightened. And just as he was going to cross over into this life of freedom, this liberated mind, he heard the cries of people behind him. And he couldn't do it. He wanted to go back and free all beings, eliminate the suffering of all beings before he would cross over into this world of Buddhahood. And so he went back and made this vow that he would not become a full Buddha until all beings had eliminated their suffering. That sounds like a great idea, but I don't think he really realized what that vow meant, because the suffering was never ending. Of course, you can see that. We can see it in our own life. It's never ending. So every time he would try to help people out or try to listen to the pains in the world, it was this constant flow of sadness and pain and difficulty and heartache, and it never ended. And so the way the story goes is he got so overwhelmed with this pain and difficulty that he exploded into a million pieces. And the Buddhas felt sorry for him and put him back together in a female form. Not because the female form was any better. Avalokiteshvara had the same vow of kindness that Kuan Yin has. But put the feminine form of this nurturing capacity to hold suffering. And some Kuan Yin pictures, you will see her in a, she has like 1,000 heads and 1,000 eyes and, you know, 1,000 arms. I have one of those at my house, and the first time my mom saw it, I think she barely was going to stay in my house because she thought there was something crazy going on. But the reason why she has so many hands and so many heads and so many eyes is the representation that we need to see a lot. We need a different kind of a body. We need a different way of being than just this human form. And we might need a lot of hands with a lot of different weapons to take on the level of suffering in the world and the amount of suffering that's going on. And then the other form I love of Kuan Yin is that picture that's over there for our remembrance shelf. She's sitting in what's called this royal ease. She's sitting with one leg up in this position that she could get up at any moment, in a moment's notice, and go and help wherever she's needed. But she is relaxed and steady. And so in this idea that we're doing both this forgiveness ceremony and moving into this welcoming ceremony, to me the ceremonies are in that royal ease. You're in this relaxed, steady place. We're going to do the forgiveness ceremony to sort of acknowledge the harm that does and shed another year of skin. And at the same time, we are ready to get up and move off into the world in this whole new way of living and stepping off into a new year with this royal ease. And so the bowing ceremony, I'll give you the instructions when we get ready to do it, but that's what that aspect is. It's two completely different aspects, but both lead towards the sense of kindness, forgiveness, and opening the heart. So I'm just going to end with this quote by Jack Kornfield. It says, "It's hard to imagine a world without forgiveness. That it is hard to imagine a world without forgiveness. Forgiveness sees wisely. It willingly acknowledges what is unjust, harmful, and wrong. It bravely recognizes sufferings of the past and understands the conditions that brought them about. Forgiveness honors the heart's greatest dignity. Whenever we are lost, it brings us back to the ground of love. Without forgiveness, our lives are chained, forced to carry the sufferings of the past and repeat them with no release. In the end, forgiveness simply means never putting another person's heart, another person out of our heart." Thank you.
Now we're going to move into the, am I on?
Yes.
Yes? Okay. The ceremonial part of this evening. So as Tuari was saying, ritual goes beyond our normal thinking mind, our normal way of seeing the world, and has a potential to transcend that. So, you know, we invite you to relax into it. You know, just kind of suspend the doubting mind and the evaluative mind and just participate as full-heartedly as you can. This is part of our lineage, part of our tradition. But also, that being said, you're welcome to participate by just being a witness, just being present in the room. So those cards that we handed out, Tuari and I will begin by saying these three sections, and we'll bow after each one. So we're asking for forgiveness for actions that we've done to the Sangha as a whole, known or unknown. And then after we've said the phrases and offered that, then you'll be invited to do the same, to say the phrases and to pause and bow. You're welcome to bow standing, kneeling, on your chair, whatever works for your body, you know, being kind to your body.
would be one of those doing something you don't normally do,
because I don't normally get on my knees anymore, so bear with me if I look a little clumsy.
There are many ways that I have hurt and harmed myself.
I have betrayed myself
knowingly and unknowingly in thoughts, words, and deeds. For the many ways my fear, pain, anger, and confusion have caused me harm,
I now extend a full and heartfelt forgiveness. I forgive myself. Just as I have caused harm to myself,
there are many ways that I have hurt and harmed others.
I may have knowingly or unknowingly caused them harm by my thoughts, words, and deeds. If out of my fear, pain, anger, and confusion I have caused you any harm, to the extent that you're ready, I ask for your forgiveness.
Please forgive me.
There are also many ways that I've been hurt and harmed by others. I may have been harmed knowingly or unknowingly by another's thoughts, words, and deeds. I remember the ways others, out of their fear, pain, anger, and confusion, have harmed me. I believe that I've carried this pain in my heart long enough. To the extent that I'm ready, I offer my heartfelt forgiveness to all those who have caused me harm.
I forgive you. So now, if you like, you can say those phrases yourselves and offer a bow. There are many ways that I have hurt and harmed myself. I've betrayed myself knowingly and unknowingly in thoughts, words, and deeds. For the many ways my fear, pain, anger, and confusion has caused me harm, I now extend a full and heartfelt forgiveness. I forgive myself. Just as I have caused harm to myself, there are many ways that I have hurt and harmed others. I may have, knowingly and unknowingly, caused them harm by my thoughts, words, and deeds. If out of my fear, pain, anger, and confusion, I have caused you any harm, to the extent that you're ready, I ask for your forgiveness. Please forgive me. There are also many ways that I have been hurt and harmed by others. I may have been harmed knowingly and unknowingly by another's thought, words, and deeds. I remember the ways others, out of their fear, pain, anger, and confusion, have harmed me. I believe I have carried this pain in my heart long enough. To the extent that I am ready, I offer my heartfelt forgiveness to all those who have caused me harm. I forgive you.
you. So now we're going to do the second half, and we need music. So one way to think of this is we're going to divide the room in half. Jean, you probably should go on this side. Tim is going to be on one side, and I'm going to be on the other side. Oh, I'm going to do this without the mic.
Stands in prayer pose, and then I will let you know when, and then we'll switch, and then this side will bow, and we'll stand in prayer pose on behalf of it. It's really quite a traditional practice for Kuan Yin. We learned it when we were in the CDL. just forgot.
Tenesra.
Yeah, Tenesra taught us this chant. And so she actually helped our group by allowing us to bow back and forth. You're not actually bowing to anyone. It's the act of bowing and the chant itself that helps release our hearts and soften our hearts. And so we're just going to all stand. And I'm going to go on this side. Tim is going to go on that side. You can bow and do a full bow if you want, so you can spread out. Or you can stand where you're at if you don't want to do the full bow and just bow at the waist. Or you can sit and do the same bow. Either way, whatever works for you is fine. So we're going to do several bows, and then you'll know it's over when we're all standing and no one's bowing anymore. Tim and I have kind of worked this out. Hopefully, it'll work. Don't need your heart anymore. Or unless you want to learn the word, you'll get it after a while. I'll sing it out loud. Thank you.
Offer forgiveness. May all beings be forgiven. Thank you for your heartfelt participation.
Thank you.